B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's an agenda-free Friday here on Felger and Mazz, driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. So when you buy or lease your car from Bernardi, remember that they have no agenda. They just want to get you in the car you want with exceptional service. That's it. Find your next Audi, Acura, Honda, or Toyota now at BernardiAutoGroup.com. Again, top of the hour here, Felger and Mazz, agenda-free Friday. We've touched on a lot of things. We're going to get to the Patriots quarterback situation, what has been going on down there in Foxborough today. Chris Gasper will join us in the next hour, as he does every Friday, but I do just want to follow up on the David Krejci discussion we were having at the end of the last segment. And I said at the beginning of the program, Murray gave what I would call informed speculation about David Krejci. So why don't you tell everybody what you heard, Murray?
Well, first, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's
what
you believe.
That's a good way to put it, informed speculation. That it wasn't any kind of bombshell to the team. This was totally his choice. He told the Bruins of this decision as far back as a couple of weeks ago. And the key part of the statement, again, the statement that David Krejci put out on social media earlier today, is at the end where he says, "This is not goodbye. I will not be a stranger. I will be a Bruin forever. I will see you at the TD Garden soon, and I will always bleed black and gold." And again, the informed speculation is that this is just a temporary thing in the Czech Republic. He's going to go over there, have his kids watch him play this season, hang with the fam. Season starts. It's the Czech Extraliga season, starts in September, ends in March. And maybe he could be back. Now, this was something I heard. I didn't know because all the babies up in my on Twitter, of course, the cesspool of Twitter and the emails. Well, don't go out with it if you don't know that he couldn't come back because he'd have to go through waivers. I didn't know that. Reading from Ty Anderson here of 98.5 The Sports Hub, if Krejci wants to come back, he would need to pass through waivers. He would need to sign before the trade deadline to be eligible for the postseason. Because we had said, okay, there doesn't say retire in this statement. Says he could be back. This is just a temporary move to the Czech Republic to play in that. So maybe he could return for the postseason. He'd have to clear through waivers. All right, I'm sure there'd be teams that would block you and get in the way. But you still could thread the needle. It could happen. The possibility is there, no matter how remote it may be.
And Murray, just to add on to your point when you say that, well, you never know what's going to happen, over in the Czech Republic. They going to play there this year? You never know, right? With, coronavirus, Delta, variant going out throughout the world. Who knows what the restrictions will be? Who knows if there's a, change of heart before the start of the season based on whatever the hell's going on in Europe in a month or two from now? So, to your point, too, that's another path to Krejci potentially coming back here. You don't know. You never know.
Yeah, I just wonder, again, so let's say Krejci does want to come back. He passes through waivers and someone else claims him. Is he going to play for that team or is he only playing for the Bruins?
Right.
Does everyone know he's only playing for the Bruins and will he pass through waivers as a result? So, look, I've seen it happen before.
There's wiggle room.
Yeah, I just think there is a little wiggle room. And Murray, again, there's no retirement word in that statement. There's no retirement word. And just, I put him and Rask together now because Rask is obviously undergoing hip surgery or has undergone hip surgery. I don't know if it's happened yet or not. But regardless, he's out until after the new year. So Rask is kind of on standby. Krejci's on standby. And you know what this really is as much as anything? And look, I understand you got to do what you got to do. The Bruins have to have these guys on standby because they don't have anything coming through their system. So they have Swayman. They traded Vladar, but they're not ready to commit to Swayman. And in the case of Krejci, I mean, maybe you wait and see what happens with Jack Stanika, but I don't think he projects necessarily as a second-line center. And there's not confidence there that they're going to be able to put those guys in right away. So their inability, really, to draft and develop talent now has them holding on to 35- or 36-year-olds and keeping them on standby in the event they need help. So I just
thought he would have been back after they re-upped Hall. And I know Mike yelled at me about that. It has nothing to do with that. And Hall wouldn't, the one doesn't have to do with the other. But I don't know, considering Hall's past and how he's carried himself and all those teams he's played for. And I know you've had those concerns about his mentality in the past, Maz. Do you maybe look at this as now, a concern because Hall just got his money here and now he turns into like Buffalo Sabres Hall? Like, whatever. I don't care that Krejci's back. I got mine.
I don't yet, Murray, because I'll tell you what. I think they kept Hall abreast of this. I think if it was clear between the organization and Krejci what was going to happen, and I think it was. I think that, as you said at the beginning of the show, Krejci told them a couple of weeks ago. They've known that this was going to happen. My guess is that they relayed that to Hall, and Hall was okay with it because he wants to stay here. And so I'm not as concerned about the Krejci part of it. I'm concerned with Hall generally, that he'll just lapse into being who he is. But I also, again, I come back to the same thing. What choice do the Bruins have? What leverage do they have? And this is the sin anytime an organization starts making bad signings, most of the time, is that they don't have options. And I don't think the Bruins have a lot of options right now. It's why they had to go out and sign a bunch of guys for the third and fourth lines, because they don't have internal options. And that leaves you with very little leverage, very little flexibility. And so you have to make decisions that you really have no other choice but to make. So to me, it's as someone said to me years and years ago, it's not when you make the bad signing, it's what led you to the bad signing, right? And I think there's some truth to that. I want to get to the Patriots quarterback situation too, which brings me to Derek in Foxborough. Go ahead, Derek.
Hi, what's up?
Oh, this is not the Derek I thought it was. So this Derek, I think, Murray, you want to tell him or should I?
Yeah, call the night show. No kids in the afternoon. I await the angry emails. Boy, do people get upset. You hung up on a kid? Yeah, call the night show.
Yeah.
I'll happily take your call 1 to 5 on Sunday. Call Matt McCarthy. I'll give you 3 minutes.
I was going to say, you're looking for Adam Jones, but I think Jones was in this morning. So call Christian Arcane tonight at 7 o'clock. Arcane should be here. Oh God, that was really
frankly, it never gets old.
That was a dick move, wasn't it? Four kids,
sure,
probably like
sure
four,
was
probably kids 14, and I just hung up on them. Chris is in Hartford. Go, Chris.
All right, guys. Happy Friday to you.
You too.
Maz, we got a little excited the other night about the whole Scherzer thing. It was pie in the sky. But my first point to you was Marwin Gonzalez is going to play first base for Alex Cora, and they're going to play small ball, and they're going to use their speed. That's what I want you guys to talk about. He's been here the whole time. Cora's just been putting him under the bench.
Okay, what speed does Marwin Gonzalez have? Like, you talk about him like he's Jaren Duran. And if you want to tell me that they're going to put Gonzalez in the late innings, okay, fine. Look, I'm okay with the moving pieces thing. I understand how that works. I'm just telling you, Kyle Schwarber is not a great fit for their roster. The left-handed bat makes sense. I've said numerous times earlier in the season, if I have one criticism about the Red Sox lineup, it's a little too right-handed. The one left-handed true power hitter you have is Devers. That's it. Just one. Verdugo's not a true power hitter from the left side. Duran's not a true power hitter from the left side. And so, you know, all your big bats are right-handed. That is what concerns me a little bit from the Red Sox, the composition of the Red Sox lineup. So I like the fact that Schwarber gives you a little more balance there. But how do you get him in without taking out Renfro or J.D. Martinez? Or, you know, if you take out Verdugo, you're losing a lefty bat. So you see what I'm getting at? It's not a great fit. And I don't think he can play first base. Or he certainly can't play it well.
Doesn't play left field well.
Doesn't play any position well.
He's a softball player.
He's a DH.
Yeah, he is. Well, you already have one of those. Real quick, though, your best lineup, your best alignment right now is Schwarber in left, Verdugo in center, Renfro in right. I think this move says something about Jaren Duran and the fact that they don't really buy in on him this year. And you know what? I don't necessarily blame him. There's a lot of strikeout. You and I have talked about this, Maz. He can run. He's electric. He's a little overrated, at least for my sense. You know, I think he's going to be a big league player, but I don't know if he's big league ready just yet. I think this move says something about Duran. This is Duran insurance. This is Renfro insurance because they thought he was just a platoon player. He's certainly been better than that. This does not fix their problems at first base. And if their approach is, we'll just put this guy at first base, I don't agree with that philosophy. I know that's what they've done at that position all year long. I'd like somebody who, I don't know, has played first base professionally before. Because continuing to roll out Franchy Cordero and Kyle Schwarber and Christian Arroyo at first base, what are we doing? You're the Boston Red Sox. You should be able to acquire somebody who's played that position before.
I mean, the Red Sox have 45 minutes here, basically. I just thought Rizzo at first would have been a much cleaner addition to the team and would have fit better.
Perfect fit.
You put him in, you take Dahl back out. And you're a better team as a result of it. John's in a car. John, go. John, are you there? okay, look, if you're not there and you're not, or you're not ready to go, like, I'm not going to waste the time. I just, that part does get a little frustrating. Jimmy's in Northbridge. Go.
The goalie situation. All these other veteran goalies signed for like $2 million. Why didn't we keep Halak anyway? And the other part of it with the Red Sox, the Schwarber thing, he's one stretch away from being retired. He's going to reach for a ground ball, and that's going to be it.
Okay, I wouldn't say he's going to retire. He's 28. Like, let's not get stupid over it.
In the first
but he does
part,
have an injury.
The first part of that, Grubauer signed a six-year, $35.5 million deal with the Kraken, so it's not like it's just short money that's going out to the goalies. He and this new guy, Linus Ullmark, signed for real money. So I don't know what was his point there. He wanted just a cheaper goalie, keep Yaroslav Halak?
Okay, so look, I do think the Ullmark contract is bigger than I thought it was, Murray.
Right.
I was not expecting $5 million a year in 4 years for the next Bruins goalie.
No,
I was
me
not
either.
Expecting that.
And the only reason I applauded it at first, because I thought it signaled the end of Tuukka Rask. But then Don Sweeney comes out later that night. He's like, oh, the door is open. We'll welcome Ben back with open arms. Yuck.
But I don't want Yaroslav Halak either. I think he's getting worse now. I think Halak is, to me.
Yeah, he hit a wall.
Yeah, I was done there with Halak. So I don't know if this guy can play, Ullmark. If he can play, fine. Great. I feel like they overpaid for him. But if he ends up being an elite goalie who was this hidden jewel in Buffalo because the Sabres suck so bad, no one understood how good the goalie was, then great. I still think I'd have preferred them give the keys to Swayman. I think that they then could have used the money in a better way in terms of roster building and team building than to give $5 million to a guy in Buffalo who's had some injury issues too.
I mean, didn't we all kind of think that that's how it was going to play out?
Yes.
I know the kid only played 10 games, but he looked pretty damn good.
I mean, that's what I would have done, Murray. I mean, it felt to me like there was a huge opening for them. Like, if you're going to manage your money in a salary cap sport, then you have to have young players coming up through your system who can play for cheap and give you good performance.
And you have that.
At goalie. Maybe nowhere else, really. At goalie, you had it.
Yeah.
That was about the one spot the Bruins had it, was in goal. And then they went out and signed a goalie for $5 million. So, again, I don't think they're going to suck, but I do think they're a little worse than they were when they ended the year. And I'm worried about that decor. 617-779-0985. I keep saying this, and I still haven't done it. Cam Newton spoke today, and Foxborough will give you the latest from down there on the quarterback situation when we come back.
Boston's home for sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Oh, he is a manipulative weasel.
And Matt.
He does himself no service by actually talking.
You've got to listen to believe.
It's about me.
Yes, absolutely.
It's about me.
No question.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ever since I've been here, it's been a quarterback competition. I think that's in essence, the underlining Patriot way. You know, every position has a competition there, and the quarterback position is no different. You know, Brian Hoyer is supposed to make me better. I'm supposed to make Mac Jones better. Mac Jones is supposed to make, Brian Hoyer better. You can't forget about Delegata and even Stitty. But, for us, it's just the mentality to have that championship, you know, mental toughness each and every day and the desire to get better.
Cam Newton today down in Foxborough during training camp says there's always a competition. This is why Belichick probably loves Cam Newton, because Cam Newton says everything that Bill wants him to say. Yep, it's a competition. It feels like it's still tilted in Newton's favor.
Yes, yeah, I would even go so far as to say it feels like it's slipping away.
Yeah, go ahead,
from Mac Jones, and this is becoming more Cam Newton's job by the day. If Mac Jones is going to take this and start week one against the Miami Dolphins, I think he needs a complete knockout. And I love to hear, day one, he was the better of the two quarterbacks. Since then, it's been Cam Newton these last 2 days. And already, yeah, slanted, slipping away, whatever you want to say. It's Cam's job. It was going into it. It was going to be Cam's job. So that's why Mac Jones would have to win by a knockout. It's already slipping away, Mess.
Yeah, it does feel that way, doesn't it? I sort of had the same feeling today. I guess Newton today was a little bit different than the last couple. The first couple of days, they were mostly like red zone stuff. Yesterday was some trick plays. Today was a little bit different. They asked a little bit more of the quarterbacks. There were some throws down the field. Apparently, mm-hmm. Newton completed a long throw. Mac Jones did as well. Newton, based on some of the numbers I saw, was 14 for 20.
Correct.
I think Jones was something like 8 for 18, but there were a couple of drops. Do you have it in front of you, Matt?
Yeah, so Cam Newton, this according to Jeff Howe, 14 of 20 today and led off every period. Mac Jones was 8 for 18 with two drops. Phil Perry had him 8 for 16 with two drops. So somewhere in there. But most importantly, Cam Newton leading off every session again. Mike Giardi adding, good day for Cam Newton. Accurate in competitive periods. Yes, had a couple of what was that throws, but overall his best day of the 3 days in camp by far.
Okay, so again, the first day went to Jones. The last two appear to have gone to Newton. And I know our simulcast producer, Vinny Crouch, has a bunch of tweets that he's going to put up too. If any of those are different from the ones that that Matt just read you, we will add here again. Phil Perry, sound finish to the session for Cam Newton, despite some wayward misses sprinkled in. Up and down day for Mac Jones. More work with first-team offensive line today for Jones. They split reps at one point, subbing in for each other in rapid succession. Again, that is Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston. And then Perry with some of the numbers that Matt just gave you as well. In 11-on-11s, Newton was 13 for 19, says one rep was wiped away by an Aguilar offensive pass interference call. Jones, 8 for 16, but with two drops. And Phil Perry says that he counted three reps for Jones that would have resulted in sacks in a live situation. Something also to watch because obviously, timing is everything, particularly for a guy who's getting acclimated. Greg Bedard says, solid day for both Patriots quarterbacks. Both made some plays. Both had some they'd like to have back. Depends on what you're looking for or who won the day. On who won the day. Both made an argument. Now, I do think that Greg is more inclined to lean towards a guy like Jones, who is a game manager, than a guy like Newton, particularly after the year Newton had last year. And I think, as am I. I just don't have a lot of faith in Cam Newton's ability to run the offense.
Refresh my memory, too. On Boston Sports Journal, going into the draft, he watched a bunch of tape of him at Alabama and was, like, wowed by it, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean this with all due respect, it feels like there's some Mac bias there with Greg's eyes, and I get it. I'd be the same way if I was sitting there watching these things with any throw that would wow me. I'm like, okay, there's the future. This kid can start. So I don't know. Like I wonder if he's watching it through like a Mac Jones colored lens. You know what I'm saying?
So I happen to agree with you a little bit, Murray. But you know what I really think it is, because I think I said something like that the other day. I don't remember, but I do think it has more to do with the fact that Jones can run an offense and Newton can't. In other words, it's not a Jones thing. It's a...
Well, one actually looks like a real quarterback.
Right, right. Yeah. It's a command of the position kind of thing. And then just quickly getting back to some of the tweets down there. Mike Reese says, one of the highlights of practice was opening up the passing game. And this is what I had seen earlier. The work was exclusively in the red zone after the first 2 days. But today gave the quarterbacks a chance to show their long ball skills. Mac Jones showing that he can push the ball downfield with accuracy on those type of plays. I think that Jones has an advantage there over Newton.
For sure.
I just don't think Newton can get the ball down the field. And I at least I don't have the confidence that he can. And if he can get it down there, I'm not sure he can do it with accuracy. Now, look, he had
one or two memorable deep throws last year. One was early in Seattle, and there was another one to, was it Demir Bird?
Yeah. Yep. The one in Seattle was to Edelman.
Yep.
The one later in the year was to Demir Bird. I think it was for a touchdown.
Yeah.
But honestly,
Bird made the play.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Murray, thank you. My recollection was it wasn't a particularly well thrown ball. And it felt like, as you would say, Murray, it felt like Newton was throwing what?
Oh, a full can of paint. Yeah.
A can of paint. That's what it looks like when he throws the football. A can of paint. For crying out loud. So I just, I don't have a lot of faith in Cam Newton's ability to like wow us. I just don't have that. I am eager to hear what Chris Gasper's thoughts are on the quarterback situation when we get a rolling with that. And with Gasper at 4 o'clock. And Newton did have some other things he said today. One was an interesting exchange, I thought, with Karen Garigian of the Herald with regard to leadership, which we'll play for you. in the next segment. But again, we have a lot going on today. David Krejci has announced he's going to go back and play in the Czech Republic. So he's out, at least for the start of the year, with the Bruins. Murray has shared with us informed speculation, along with the Krejci statement, that seems to suggest that Krejci is leaving the door open to return to the Bruins maybe late in the year or even during the playoffs. Again, there's no mention of retirement in Krejci's statement today. And the Major League trading deadline, Major League Baseball trading deadline, now just a half hour away, basically. And it feels to me like the American League is adding pieces all over the place, with the exception of one team, and that's the Red Sox, who have made one move for a guy that really doesn't seem to fit their roster, if you ask me, in Kyle Schwarber. So, 617-779-0985. Let's go to Jack, who's in Connecticut. Go ahead, Jack.
Hey, guys. It seems like Chaim Bloom is the GM for every team in the AL East except for Boston. I mean, he's got 30 minutes. Let's see if he has a sack. But if not, this team could be screwed. Also, I think one other point.
Jack, I'm going to leave you there. Let's just stick with the one point. Again, it's easier to digest one thing at a time. Matt, how do you feel about Chaim Bloom's deadline?
Not great. Again, he's got a half hour to go here. The Red Sox need a starting pitcher, and they need a first baseman. You get two of those guys, I'll be content with it. I'll be happy. But this was Chaim Bloom's first real test as general manager, chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, all right? Mookie Betts was an ownership-level decision. This is your first time in the middle of it. I had somebody tweet me yesterday, and you know, I thought it was a good one. Chaim Bloom, not a wartime consigliere. Let's see if Chaim Bloom is a wartime consigliere. Because you know what? Everybody else around you is making moves, and it's time for you to step up and be general manager of the Boston Red Sox and to operate like you're the Boston Red Sox. You have the best record in the American League. Do something about it. That's the way it works in this town. That's what happens when you run one of the most important baseball teams on the face of the planet. You will be expected to do things. You will be expected to add in arms races, because there is an arms race going on in the American League, because the American League is winnable. It's very winnable. That's why everybody else is being aggressive. Let's see what Chaim Bloom does over the next half hour, because so far, this ain't good enough.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Schwarber edition, but
sure do.
This has been downright Ainge-esque. You know, I made a little meme last night of Danny Ainge on the left side and Chaim Bloom on the right, and then said, real recognize real. And then 30 seconds later, they made the move for Schwarber, so I had egg in my face for that. But this can't be it. They got to do something else. Tell me you're adding an arm. And right now, you know, they do kind of look like the interest kings, a la Danny Ainge. I saw you retweet this, Matt McCarthy. So Ken Rosenthal, again, putting out there that the Phillies are close to getting Kyle Gibson, yep, and Ian Kennedy from the Rangers. But they were in on or had interest in Kyle Gibson. And again, it's very Danny Ainge-esque. Like, well, we were interested, but we just missed out. Like, are you maybe overvaluing some of your prospects? How aggressive are you being here? Schwarber just can't be the move. There's got to be something else.
I mean, in the most active deadline in a long, long time, the Red Sox are the fourth most active team in the American League and the eighth most active American League East and the eighth most active team in the American League. You got seven teams ahead of them doing significantly more.
So, again, as Matt McCarthy told you, it's been an interesting deadline in MLB. You don't usually get them like this. There have been a lot of guys who have moved here in the last few days.
It's been wild. This is
a
good
lot
for baseball.
It really is. A ton of guys have moved. And I'm going back to the Nelson Cruz deal even that Tampa Bay made to really start this thing. So McCarthy will get you caught up on the big moves, and there are a lot of them in Major League Baseball, a lot of significant names that are changing teams. He'll get you caught up on those and headlines. And then when we come back, I do want to play that exchange for you between Cam Newton and Karen Garigian of the Boston Herald. I thought it was an interesting exchange. We'll get to that after McCarthy gets you caught up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The best analysis.
Forget about what's being said. Everyone's ripping someone for something somewhere.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I mean, bro, 2020 is over with. You know what I'm saying? I'm tired of dwelling on that. You know, my main focus now is just trying to get better and to be the best quarterback that I could possibly be for the New England Patriots here moving forward and trying to come out here each and every day and using this as an opportunity to do that.
Cam Newton with an interesting exchange today down at Foxborough. 2020's over with. Someone, I think, asked him, and again, some of the questions were hard to hear, but so that's why they were edited out. But the question to him was essentially, can you at all articulate how much more comfortable you are this year versus last year, et cetera, et cetera. He says, hey, look, 2020's over with. This sort of gets back, Murray, to that comment the other day, everybody has a clean slate. So, which I know that Greg Bedard interpreted as a vote in Newton's favor by Bill Belichick. Then when Bill Belichick said, you know, clean slate for everybody, meaning Newton as well.
Yeah, I think we read this wrong, Maz.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because again, I think we so badly want it to be Mac Jones because there's more upside. There's more excitement with the first round quarterback and all of that. But no, it's we're forgetting about 2020 and all that Cam had to deal with here. He didn't have the real training camp, COVID, all the excuses that were made. Cam's got the clean slate. I think this is what it was more about.
I mean, again, so when Newton was asked about it today, the response there, like, he sort of chuckles, 2020's over.
Yeah.
And I think Bill drilled that into his head.
Well, like, right.
When I sort of put those two together now, the clean slate comment and then Cam Newton saying 2020 is over, I think that it's all tied together. And that Bill says, okay, ground zero, no COVID. We got some players around you. You're going to get a full training camp. You're going to get OTAs. You're going to get mini camp. You're going to get all of that stuff. And we're going to see how this works. I'm going to give you a fresh start.
A clean slate.
So that Cam Newton doesn't even want to talk about 2020 anymore. And he did have an exchange with Karen Garrigan of the Boston Herald that I just thought was interesting because I think Cam Newton has been a much more likable player. And he's a terrific teammate. Way better teammate than I thought he was. But I still do have doubts about his ability to run an offense. I just think he's cashed. I think the guy's done. I don't think there's a lot of talent left there anymore. And Karen Garrigan asked him an interesting question about leadership. Okay? And you guys tell me whether I'm reading into this or not. But I thought it was, anyway, go ahead, Billy, play it.
Is your natural inclination to be a leader, or do you have to force that with yourself?
Huh? I don't understand your question.
I mean, are you the type of personality that likes to lead as opposed to follow?
I think, you know, by default in all of sports, you know, everybody knows a quarterback to be the leader on the team, no matter whether you want to be or not. And we all lead completely different. I lead completely different than Devin McCourty. I lead completely different than Matthew Slater. I lead completely different than Hightower. I lead completely different than, you know, James White. And that doesn't make him a better leader than me or vice versa. You know, we all have our roles on this team, and, you know, no matter what's expected, you know, you just have to make sure that you're holding yourself accountable as a person who leads by example first and then go about it the other way. All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay, so that was the last question of Newton's media session. And Karen Garrigan, for those who couldn't hear it, because, again, it's hard to hear, we tried to amplify it, but she said, do you consider yourself a natural leader or someone that sort of has to force himself to do that? And he says, what? I understand the question. And then she asked it again. You know, do you consider yourself someone who likes to lead? And I thought his answer was kind of a walk around. Like, I don't think he said, well, yeah, I like to lead. I'm a quarterback. Of course I like to lead. That's my job. And that's what I do. That's who I am.
Well, it certainly wasn't a direct answer, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, so, and I think, now look, again, I think that in some ways Newton's a leader, but I also wonder, is he the kind of guy that's going to air out a teammate when a teammate needs to be aired out? Or is he the kind of guy that's going to give him nicknames and make sure everybody's buddy-buddy and on the same page?
Well, it's the latter. Don't we already know that?
Yes. Yes.
Awfully nice to N'Keal Harry last year, wasn't he?
And so this is sort of what I'm getting at, Murray, that in some ways, I don't know, is Newton a leader? Do you think he's a leader? I'm just asking the generic question.
Not in the grab the jersey, bark in your face when necessary to get you on the same page type of leader. No, I don't ever recall even seeing that when he was with the Carolina Panthers and winning the MVP 5-6 seasons ago. I don't think I've ever seen that. He was more like lead by example, you know, with how he was playing when he was playing really well. Otherwise, no, it's all kind of grab ass and nicknames and dancing.
I mean, did he run the offense like a leader?
No.
So
certainly not.
So look, and again, I like the guy. I like him. I like Newton a lot. I think he's a way, way better guy than I would have guessed. I thought he was more immature than he's been since he's got here. So there's a lot about Newton that I really, really like.
Man, just in terms of like the X's and O's of it, like, you know, checkdowns, audibles, anything like that, I don't recall him really leading the offense last year.
Me neither. And again, I think his teammates like him. But teammates like a lot of guys who I wouldn't necessarily call leaders. And again, I just thought it was an interesting exchange with Karen Gurian because I don't know if Newton's really a leader. And I go back to his Carolina days as evidence of that. The obvious one being in the Super Bowl. I mean, does a leader not jump on a fumble in the Super Bowl? Like, what leader has a chance to jump on a fumble?
And hesitates.
Right. No leader does that. The leader jumps on the ball. He doesn't even bat an eye about it. So that's one thing. The other thing is I do go back to early in his career when there was adversity and Newton would go to the sideline and hang his head and Steve Smith would get really agitated and air him out about it. And all that stuff happened early in his career. And I think leaders respond to adversity. And the problem here is, and this isn't Newton's fault, but we had the best ever when it comes to that. We had a guy who was down 28-3 in the Super Bowl and didn't hang his head. So now Brady at the end.
Everyone else on the team was saying, you know, remember the was it to Chris Long, who was new on the team that year? Like, yeah, don't worry about it. We can still come back. We got Tom.
But again, like, you know, there was this, and a lot of it is Brady's confidence and his ability and to run the offense and all that. So it all spins off of that. They all had confidence in him, which is another thing. Don't you have to have confidence in your leader? Doesn't your leader have to inspire confidence? Doesn't your leader have to step up to the line of scrimmage and know where the blitz is coming from or who the hot read is or what needs to be done in a critical situation? And I just don't know that Newton does. So, like, you know, if you were to ask me...
You already know the answer to that. You know that he doesn't. Because if he did, you wouldn't have that story from Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, come out where there's unnamed players. Well, that's who I think it is. And you tend to think it's Josh McDaniels, say that, you know, they would prefer Mac Jones, essentially, because, you know, they don't trust Cam Newton and his ability at this point in his career.
So but you hear this a lot about Newton, that other guys respond to him as if he's a leader. And there are certain aspects of him that I think are good. He's got a good work ethic. He tries hard. I think all of that is there. But the true leader gives you more. There's more than that. And the way he answered the question, I even went, that's not how a leader would answer the question. A leader would say, look, you can call me whatever you want. I'm the quarterback. My job's to lead the offense. I'm going to lead the offense. And do I like doing it? Yeah. Like, I almost expected him to get in Karen's face there a little bit, but he didn't. And I don't think the guy has it. Unfortunately, I think Bill Belichick has already committed to him. The deeper we get into this, that's what it feels like. Don't go anywhere. Agenda Free Friday on Felger and Mass. We'll continue with your calls next.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go. Sports Hub app. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mazz.
Those guys are always trouble. I want nothing to do with this guy.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's a tough tightrope to walk, but it's where we want to be. Ideally, we have that tightrope that we're walking every year where, you know, if we want to keep ourselves out of the basement, we have to make sure that no matter how good we are, we're never just throwing away our future. Otherwise, you know, you get what you would expect to get if you do that. So that's always a tightrope that we expect to have to walk. It's where we want to be. It's a heck of a lot better than selling off pieces because you have no chance.
That was High and Bloom a few weeks back on the trading deadline, which is now just about 5 minutes away, and another big deal in Major League Baseball just happened. Billy, fire it!
This is Breaking Sports News.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Jeff Passan, ESPN, blue check mark. Chris Bryant to San Francisco, source tells ESPN. So Chris Bryant, in many ways, one of the last big chips, it feels like, that was going to fall. We've been waiting for this one for an hour. It has happened. Chris Bryant goes to San Francisco. The Giants have been waiting to make a big splash. They do it. Just about everybody's done something. And the Red Sox are sitting here with Kyle Schwarber. I'm happy, Maz. I'm doing great right now. I'm hanging in there.
This feels negligent is what it feels like
right
now.
It is an abdication of responsibility. Okay. That is what this will be. If Heim Bloom does not make a move here in the next 4 minutes and 15 seconds, it will be an abdication of responsibility.
Well, who the hell's left? I'm sorry to keep cutting you off, Maz, but like, what else can you do here? Like, what, I mean, realistically, what names come to mind, Matt?
The big names are all gone. I mean, you're hoping for something like a CJ Cron. I don't think he's gone yet from the Rockies. You know, the Yankees are, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel. They just added a lefty, Andrew Heaney from the Angels with a 5 ERA. That's kind of where we're at right now. Just about everybody's gone. I don't anticipate anything here in the next few minutes. I don't.
I'll tell you what. I don't think I've ever seen a major league trading deadline like this one. Everybody who is on the market has been moved.
It's been awesome.
Just about. Anyway, like, there's a few who haven't. Trevor Story hasn't been moved. He's still with the Colorado Rockies. He was rumored to be on the market early on. But that one always felt like a long shot from the beginning. The Cubs have pretty much traded anyone who wasn't nailed down.
Yep.
Chris Bryant, gone. Javier Baez, gone. Anthony Rizzo, gone. The lefty reliever, Chafin, gone. Craig Kimbrell, gone.
Tapera.
Ryan Tapera, yeah.
Ryan Tapera, gone. The Cubs have completely traded their entire team.
They nuked the whole thing.
A fire sale by the Chicago Cubs. In fact, there were fans literally on the north side jumping on trains to go to the south side because the White Sox got Craig Kimbrell from the Cubs. It is unbelievable what the Cubs have sold off. None of them coming to the Red Sox, by the way. Did I mention Rizzo? Rizzo,
yep,
traded?
You mentioned Rizzo.
Okay. So Rizzo also traded to the Yankees, and you heard Matt McCarthy say, a lot of teams in the American League have made multiple deals.
Yeah. Every team.
And just in terms of the American League East, so teams like the Yankees, who, I get it, they're three games out of the wild card or whatever, but I've considered them dead, maybe foolishly, but I've considered them dead for the better part of a month. And even the Blue Jays. As aggressive as they have been, especially with the Blue Jays adding Barrios, from Minnesota, do you think that they look at the Red Sox and say they can be had, and that's why they've made moves like this?
Funny you should bring that up, Murray. Because I think that's something we're going to get into with Chris Gasper here in just a couple of minutes, which you may have already known. Maybe that's why you teed it up the way you did, because you're smart, Murray. I do think it is, yeah, I think a lot of people look at the league, Murray, and say exactly that. I think they look at it and say, yeah, the Red Sox are good, but they've overachieved. Tampa is good, but they're Tampa. You know, they have restrictions in terms of payroll, so they can be had. The Yankees have underachieved. Toronto has a lot of talent, but they don't know how to win. And look, this is something we said at the beginning of the year, right? That when you look across the landscape in the American League, who is the truly dominant team that everyone is gunning for? In the National League, it's pretty apparent. Dodgers, Padres. Those two teams out of the gate were the most talented teams on paper, and everybody knew it, which is why we made a big deal out of those games. Even you, Murray, made a big deal out of those games early in the year when the Padres played the Dodgers. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. It was like the first 2 weeks of the season.
Okay, so now the Giants are the Red Sox of the National League. They're sort of the team that came out of the woodwork and has played better than everybody thought they would. And they have a terrific record. They just added Chris Bryant.
Yep.
They just added Chris Bryant, who might have been the single biggest prize available on the free agent market. If it was either him or Scherzer, in all probability. I mean, you want to talk about Barrios, you can. But Bryant is a lineup-altering talent.
Sure is.
Nelson Cruz is pretty good, too, but he's a DH. Bryant can move around the diamond. And so, you know, there are just a lot of good players that have moved. And unless something happens here in the next couple of minutes that we don't know about, and then Murray, even to your point, even if something does happen, who's left?
Well, so we forgot a name that we were kicking around, I think, just yesterday. And I know he's not what he was anymore, but what if they land Eric Hosmer?
No, not good enough. I mean, it helps.
Real first baseman.
Yeah, he's
though.
A real first baseman. If you get a prospect in return with that, okay. You know, it's an upgrade at first base, absolutely. We'll see if something happens here. But I don't have a good feeling about this, guys. I think the Red Sox have done everything they've done, and that's one thing, Kyle Schwarber. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. I'm not going to be happy if this is it. I'm just going to tell you right now, not going to be happy.
Okay, so this is what we're going to do, because we're at the top of the hour here, and the Major League trading deadline has now, we've now reached it. It's now about 30 seconds past 4 o'clock. And so the Major League trading deadline has come and gone, but as is always the case, or often the case, these deals tend to trickle in, and there are little announcements that come here for several minutes beyond 4 o'clock, which I'm sure we will get via the usual suspects on Twitter, John Heyman, Joel Sherman.
Ken Rosenthal.
Yeah, who am I leaving out? Passan, Rosenthal, all those guys. Not that I need to rattle them off, but you get the idea. So we'll keep an eye on that. Chris Gasper of Channel 5 will join us here now in a matter of seconds. McCarthy will get you caught up on headlines, including the latest big deal in what has been an absolute avalanche of activity in the Major League trading deadline. McCarthy will get you caught up. Gasper joins us next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.